The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today's March 3rd, 2015, and we are sponsored by today, U.S. Wellness Meats. That's my buddy John Wood. That's all grass-fed. He is the top guy in the industry. John has got to be one of the hardest-working men I've ever met in my life, and he and your family like you to come and check out their website, and that's www.grasslandbeef.com. And I would say give them a try. I've done business with John since the early 90s. Their stuff is all top-notch. I mean, besides beef, he's got bison, lamb, poultry, duck, et cetera, pork. You got to go out and look at his site, and if you're real interested in any type of supplements, he has a wellness company basically dealing with that. It's called U.S. Cell Wellness. That's www.uscellwellness.com. So go out and give John a try, and I guarantee you, you'll be happy as can be. His site is just loaded with information. Go out, look at it, research it. I highly recommend John, and I thank John for being part of Motivation and Muscle. Well, today is Tuesday, and if you've been paying attention to our Tuesdays since the beginning, Roger LaPointe is my guest on Tuesday morning. Roger is the big boss, the big banana of Atomic Athletic. Super equipment. I've done business with Roger since his days at York. It's people like Roger and John and a lot of the other people that are associated with this show, which makes this show so great. Raj, I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle.
Thank you, Eric. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. Roger and I are going to talk about the York Gang circa 1940. As you know, Roger had worked for York for many years and a few other places before he went on his own. So, Raj, let's get into the York Gang. This ought to be real. This ought to be a great show because I'm going to have to be a student on a lot of this too. So, lay it on us.
We're going to have some great names here. And
okay.
The names that we've got here, these are the names that for, 50 years, people were talking about these names and everybody else revolved around them. And, the names are classics, okay? We've got, if you just get into the names, we can start off with John Henry. We've got Tarzan. We've got, I'm not kidding, strength names that, from culture and literature, except they're real people's names in this case. So when I say John Henry, it's John Henry Davis Jr., who was born January 12th, 1921 in Smithtown, New York. So, Smithtown, New York is Long Island. That's where he was from. And, he made his first U.S. weightlifting team as an alternate to the 1938 World Championships in Vienna, Austria. Mm-hmm. He was 17 years old.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And everybody thinks of him as this amazing heavyweight.
Yep.
Which he was, undefeated in weightlifting competition for 15 years. Two gold medals in the Olympics, 48 and 52. Awesome character. Here's where we're going to go, though. We're going to go circa 1940. So John is only 20 years old. He's an up-and-comer at this point where, 1938, he won at the World Championships. but he was a 181 pounder.
It's amazing, isn't it? Did they call them heavyweights?
Well, heavyweight was over 181.
Yeah.
So yep. If you weighed more than 100, if you weighed 182 pounds,
you're a heavyweight.
You could theoretically be competing with, you know, a 350 pounder.
Sure.
So in John's case, he dropped 13 pounds to get down to that 181 weight limit because there was an open spot on the team.
Okay.
And that's why he did it. But even though he had to drop that weight and feeling weak from the dieting, he still won the championship. So that's an awesome thing. But we've got other names. You know, I said Tarzan. There's this character, a real guy, who was a, I think he was a YMCA instructor in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the capital, right up the road from York Barbell.
Yep.
And let me find what we've got on Tarzan Lunt is his name. Okay.
Great name, man.
Yeah.
Tarzan Lunt.
Yeah, and he was the weightlifting instructor at the Harrisburg Y. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tarzan Lunt, if for people who have been reading my email newsletter, the Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin, several years ago, I did a bulletin on Tarzan Lunt and one of the most amazing feats of grip strength I've ever seen.
Wow.
The guy curled a 45-pound York Olympic plate.
Oof.
No, get this. This is the 1940 version, so it's the real thin hub one.
Oh, okay.
Where it's almost like a tube. Okay, it's called a deep dish plate, folks.
Yeah.
So, and these are highly collectible today. They've got a real thin lip on them. I've got one.
I've got one, I think, too.
And I've looked for a second one, and I simply won't pay what people want to charge for them on eBay.
When I'm out all over the place in places like outside of the city, I'm always looking for the garage sale signs, and I always stop because a few times I've gotten lucky, man. And you never know what's sitting in an old barn somewhere somebody wants to get rid of. And, you can walk in and find York from end to end of one of those old rickety garages. So I know the stuff's out there, and I agree with you. It's just too pricey.
It is out there. And, for me, I know what prices are because I've been in the business for 20 years.
Yep.
But, I'm looking for that. I'm not in a hurry. It's not like I'm going to quit lifting next week if I don't get it.
Well, that's what the podcast is for. Yeah. You can always put it out there and tell people that what you're looking for.
So, anyway, Tarzan Lunt in this grip feat, and there's a picture to go with it. So the guy, so it's legit. The guy is curling a 45-pound York Olympic plate.
Yep.
By the hub.
Unreal.
Unreal. You look. What? How is he? One of those deals where the guys were really, really into strength. But the focus today is not just on this guy.
Yep.
The focus is on who the York gang was in 1940. Yep. And Hoffman had an awesome showcase for this thing.
Yep.
He had the Strength and Health Picnic.
Yep.
Okay? Now, the Strength and Health Picnic was exactly what you would think. It happened in City Park.
Yep.
Under the trees. In the, outdoors.
Yep.
And the key to it, though, I think, And part of what made it so special,
yep,
is that it really was a different time.
Sure it was.
You know, 1940, you didn't have television. You certainly didn't have the internet.
Nope.
The radio shows were a big deal. In mm-hmm. fact, radio shows would frequently be broadcast live,
yep.
and they would do variety shows on the radio in front mm-hmm. of a live audience. In fact, one of the really fantastic shows that got me into thinking about this stuff mm-hmm. was put on by John Terlazzo, Tony
yep.
Tony Terlazzo's younger brother,
yep.
when he owned a gym in New York City.
Right.
And he was good friends with John Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do a hand balancing thing for the radio.
That's awesome.
Which, you know, you think about what you and I are doing right now.
Right.
And it's essentially a radio broadcast.
Yep.
So you've got to have all those personality characteristics to make it interesting. You've got to have somebody who can describe what's really going on in an entertaining
yep.
fashion. And they, you know, you didn't have really good speaker systems then. You didn't have really good microphones then. You know, a talkie film
yep.
was actually a new thing at that point. And I think they were fairly standard by that time, because I guess they just took off immediately.
Yep.
But talkies didn't happen until, I think, the early 1930s. So you had a history of live events going back to vaudeville, and people would drive to go see something like this. In fact, when I worked at York, some of the older guys I talked to, guys like Smitty and John Terlazzo, I met him, I believe he was 84 years old, and this was in 97, and he only lived for another 9 months after that. So these York picnics were such a big deal, and people would come from all over the world to go to these events to see the best of the best, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I've done a lot of research on this. This was not an unusual concept to put together a live show.
Mm-hmm.
But typically the best live shows were done like in the New York City area.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Because you had vaudeville there. And,
yep.
A guy could do 10 events in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
If he was doing a hand balancing thing, he might be part of a vaudeville show. He might
mm-hmm.
show up halfway through a weightlifting thing,
yep.
do some more hand balancing, get up the next morning and do his hand balancing on a radio broadcast, get some personal training in, not where he's getting trained, but where he's
right.
training other people, maybe at Sig Klein's gym, something like that. So there would be 3-4 days straight, and a guy like John Davis, who lived in Brooklyn and grew up in Smithtown, might be able to visit his mom and
yeah.
Do that kind of thing. So you had a big conglomeration right there. The York thing, York, Pennsylvania, and for those of you who don't know, York, Pennsylvania is not New York as in New York City. I get people outside of that mid-Atlantic area saying, oh, so it's based in New York. No, no, no. It's based in York, Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Which is a little town that – it's not that little. You know, the final assembly plant for Harley-Davidson is based there. York Heating and Air Conditioning is based there. It's there's a lot of manufacturing in the area.
Sure.
But it's literally – I think 50 miles direct north of Baltimore, and maybe 60 miles, 70 miles west of Philadelphia.
Yep.
So back then, those were big draw areas for people to be able to drive.
Yep.
And there is this fantastic write-up that they did on the 1940 picnic. And, you talk about inspiration for things.
Sure, sure.
This has the funniest inspiration. 10, 15 years ago, I came across a guy who knew that I had worked at York, and he had a case of these things called the Spoonomat. Okay,
yeah.
And yes, it is exactly what it sounds like. It looks like a spoon with a fairly thick round handle, and it's got a weird triangular nub sticking out of the end of the bowl part of the spoon. Okay,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
At the far end is a thicker area that just looks decorative.
Yeah,
and it's round. You press that in and twist it about half a turn, and it springs up, telescoping, okay? Becomes twice as long. And if you've ever seen one of those spring-loaded automatic screwdrivers.
Yeah, yep.
It's got the same transmission in it that one of those screwdrivers has. And you put the nub in the bottom of your glass, press down, and the spoon spins at high speed.
Cool. Huh.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I bought a case of these
from
the guy, and I've been slowly selling them off for years. And when I did my events, especially the Atomic Athletic Great Black Swamp Old Time Strongman Picnics, I'd always have one of these spoons. They're chromed, they're in mint condition, they're in their original cardboard boxes with the instruction manual.
Mm-hmm.
And the instruction manual, if you're into antiques and it's sort of that picking culture and that kind of deal, this is the kind of graphics that I know some of my customers have framed.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's in that sort of comic book 1940s, late 1930s style.
Mm-hmm.
And York sold these for a while, but they were originally brought out for this 1940 picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually engraved like Bob Hoffman birthday or picnic or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I've still got, I don't know, maybe 30 of them.
Yep.
And I ran across this article as I was reading an old Strength and Health. I thought, no way. This is the article that, and it's extensive, that covers the first of the big picnics, which he did for until the early 1970s. I can't find when the last one was, but a lot of guys like our buddy John McKean, who we want to get on the show. I've known John for years. He's a really wonderful guy.
Great guy.
Aside from the fact that I think he has over 200 records in what would be called the old odd lifts in the USAWA, the All-Round Association, which is unbelievable. He's got to be the all-time greatest record holder for it because, I mean, how do you get 200 records? Good Lord. He's got in multiple weight classes, all that kind of thing. Anyway, John has told me some stories about when he went to the York picnics in the 1960s, which were a really big deal then, even though, you know, radio had become a much bigger thing and even passed up by television. There were more and more television stations, and obviously today we have cable and satellite and the internet and YouTube and all that kind of deal. But back in 1940, you would get a magazine called Strength and Health. There were several other magazines, but none of them were as big as Strength and Health. And the guys who were the York Gang in 1940 were headed by Bob Hoffman, who was the founder of the York Barbell Company. Now, he had purchased the Milo Barbell Company in 1932, and he had also purchased the Strength magazine from Alan Calvert, who was the owner of the Milo Barbell Company and the founder of it, and turned it into Strength and Health magazine. And it immediately took off. And if you think about the timing of when he did that, you know, guy had some balls. This is 1932. Oh, yeah. This is the height of or the bottom of the Great Depression, depending on how you think of it. And made it work selling weights. He made it work also as a PR guy. Okay. So one of the things he did is he brought in the best lifters he could find. Featured them in the magazine, sold the magazine, sold subscriptions, all that kind of thing, and turned it into just the biggest thing weightlifting had ever seen. And and Bob didn't just have York Barbell. Everybody thinks that, oh, he had York Barbell. Bob actually, with his money, sunk money into houses, hotels. So, like, people would come to York. They'd stay at one of the hotels that Bob owned. One of the things that they mention here in this article is the small grocery store that Bob owned, which to me sounds they call it a market. I'm guessing it was more of a small, probably seasonal vegetable type market. But Hoffman was into all kinds of good food and the whole physical culture lifestyle. And he talks about in here, and this is really an amazing thing because you don't hear a lot about this kind of thing today. It's how weightlifting can improve your life and make you successful.
Without a doubt.
Well, one of the guys they have here that they focus, one of the York guys who is a virtual unknown today. And I'll read you what Wikipedia has to say about John Terry. John Terry, the weightlifter. So John Terry, Pittsburgh, born in Pittsburgh, December 20th, 1908, High Point, North Carolina, died April 17th, 1970, was an Olympic weightlifter for the United States. That's pretty much it.
That's all.
Weightlifting achievements, Olympic Games team member, 1936 and 1940, senior Olympic champion, senior national champion, 1938 through 1941. Notes of interest: John Terry was a world record holder in the deadlift, ultimately hitting 610 pounds.
And what was he, about 132?
Yes, exactly. He was 132-pound body weight. They say right here, and many consider him to be the greatest pound-for-pound deadlifter in world history when the time element is considered.
Yep. Just to
end
drop
of
this.
Bio.
Not to, I don't mean to interrupt you, but just so people know, I don't know what issue because I'm not up in my library. But John Terry is on the cover of Hard Gainer magazine. You're going to have to go out to their site and look. If I remember next week's show, I'll get it and give you the number of the magazine. The guy was, like, built from head to toe. I'm not kidding. I mean, you talk about strength. But go on. I mean, I just want to mention that because if anybody's looking for an article, they did a great article, and he is on the cover of Hard Gainer.
You know, they have – as a reference, Hard Gainer issue number 40. They don't show whether or not this is the cover issue you're talking about because I could see Hard Gainer covering John Terry in more than one issue. But he's definitely from issue number 40, which would be January, February of 96, which would be volume 7, number 4.
Yep, that's probably it.
And you know, that's all they have to say about John Terry as far as Wikipedia goes. So you say, okay, well, here's a guy who was pretty darn successful in weightlifting.
Yeah.
You know, three-time national champion. That's no small feat. There are two Olympic teams and – one of the best deadlifters, pound for pound, of all time. Mm-hmm. And we're talking long before the age of steroids. I mean, this guy, definitely natural. Well, here's a little factoid they put in here. And these old articles are just filled with these little factoids.
Yep.
They talk about what different guys are doing and how successful they are.
Mm-hmm.
We have the other York champions have made good progress toward financial success in life. Terry, Yay Man Cafe proprietor.
Yep.
He owned a diner in York.
Yep.
Is doing very well and earning a salary of three figures weekly.
Yeah. Well, they look it. It's like anything with success and confidence, it translates to everything in your life. I just got it. John Terry is number 40, and he's on the cover of Hard Gainer. The issue is number 40.
Okay. There you go.
So anybody that wants to look the man up and read about him, there you go. You got the information.
Well, and what's also interesting, and you don't see frequently, and it's hard to tell in some of these things, although, you've got a photo here of John Terry snatching, and he did a split snatch, apparently, 200 pounds, doing a 200-pound split snatch at 132 at the picnic, okay?
Yep.
Well, folks, John Terry was a black guy.
Yep.
So all of those things that you've read about maybe in Brooks Kubik's book on John Davis, John Terry had to put up with all that same BS.
Yep.
All that stuff. And yet, here he is owning a diner, multiple team member for the Olympics, national champion, so on and so forth. And, you know, once World War II came in, strength and health changed quite a bit because everything became oriented towards the war effort. But that hadn't happened yet as of September 22nd, 1940. So the guys we're talking about, John Henry Davis, Bob Hoffman, Steve Stanko, John Grimmick, Tony Terlazzo, John Terry, other minor guys like Tarzan Lunt. You know,
yeah. You gotta love the name, man.
You know, how could a guy be named Tarzan and not end up in the strength field? Or maybe gymnastics.
Either that or a fight with somebody every day.
Well, exactly. So I want to read you some of the lifting that took place. So one of the things that they did at the picnic is they would have team competitions.
Yep.
And they took Terlazzo and Stanko, Turpak and Davis, and mm-hmm. had them compete as teams against each other. Okay?
Yep.
So to give you an idea of some of these lifts, they did, you know, so it's four guys doing three lifts. And Terlazzo, who was the first gold medalist in weightlifting for the United States, 36, the Berlin Olympics, and
yep.
he was the 132-pounder. Pressed 250, snatch 245, jerk 305.
Phew.
Yeah, it's, you know, pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah,
that's no small feat right there. Stanko pressed 300, snatched 300, jerked 370.
Oh, that he was awesome, that boy.
Yeah, they say that he was the most ferocious lifter anybody had ever seen. And this includes Grimmick writing about him. And what they mean by that is Stanko did what's called a dive bomb style
mm-hmm.
approaching the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing Olympic lifting, there are guys who do, some of them do what's called pumping, where they'll lift their hips and
yep.
it pump several times, and then they do their pull off
right.
the ground. There are other guys who are static and then just go. In Stanko's case, the guy would not even have his hands on the bar yet, walk or practically run up to the bar, grab it, and do the lift right there.
Yeah.
So he didn't set himself.
Nope.
He ran right up to it and did it, and he was a splitter.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get an idea of what he was doing, and considered incredibly fast. Just a very, very fast lifter. Did not train in the power lifter style of I'm going to grind this out,
right.
but more right. in a almost like a power clean and
yeah.
power snatch style.
Yep.
Where there was not a big dip. Like guys like John Davis and Norbert Szymanski were so technical. They got their back leg down so far that there might be a judge with their head right next to the platform to see if their knee touched.
Yeah.
That would not have been Stanko's style. It was obvious that he was really pulling this big weight as high as he could.
Well, one thing I liked about Stanko, too, was, and I don't know if this was why he did it, I'm just kind of guessing. I like the idea, you know, obviously he had practiced all this, but the way I look at it, the way he ran up to a bar and just nailed it, it's like, if you look at things sometimes, you know, with the technical end or people setting themselves up, it's almost like the guy didn't even give him a chance. He didn't give him any opportunity to overthink or fail. It was like, that was his style. He went up. Bang, you know what I mean? It was none of this, and everybody's got their own style, but that's how I kind of always looked at him, whereas, like, He had the confidence. Obviously, he'd done it in training over and over again. It was just like he ran up to it, bang, he pressed it, jerked it. Whatever he did, that's how I always saw him. Now, I could be totally ass backwards on that, but if I'm putting my head in what he's doing, to me, that kind of limits possibly failures there.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, to me, that's a I'm all in kind of guy.
Exactly, man.
Where there's he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Or he's going to fail big. And,
right,
you know, that's I think a lifting style actually shows a person's personality. That's just that's just my opinion looking at this kind of thing. And I'll tell you, when I went to the Nakachi Championships for York down in Guatemala, I was not a lifter there. I was doing it, you know, York as business and politics and that sort of thing. But the there was one lifter who I believe lifted for Guatemala, and he would have been like either a heavyweight or just shy of heavyweight. Like I think at the time it would have been like a 107 class.
Yeah.
But this guy, we're sitting out in the audience, and they call him. Nobody's showing up. The clock is ticking down. They call him again. The buzzer buzzes at 30 seconds. He's still not there. 10 seconds from the limit, this guy comes walking out. When I say walking, almost like race walking.
Yeah.
It's practically a run.
Yep.
And he does that. Now, he did it squat style.
Yep.
But he did his lift dive bomb style. I'd never seen it before.
Wow.
And it was so amazing to watch because it wasn't all in, I'm doing this, there's no chance for failure.
Yeah.
And, I don't think he had the best lift of the day.
Yeah.
But it was not insignificant. I mean, he was one of the better lifters in all of Guatemala, I'm sure, because he was on their national team. It was awesome to watch, though. And that's what you had with Stanko. Now, at the beginning of this article, it's fantastic. They talk about Stanko and what he did the day before this picnic. He pressed 300, snatched 300, clean and jerked 380, and did the jerk twice from the shoulder.
Jesus.
So, and you know, the writer says, normally lifters don't train the day before the contest.
So much for recovery, huh?
Yeah.
Jesus. That shows you a very conditioned athlete there, man.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I don't know if anybody ever questioned him about that, but you know something? I'm sure he probably did multiple days like that at one time or another just to prepare him. Because somebody like that, man, you know, they might be unorthodox the way they do things, but I believe people like that are prepared, and preparation is everything to success. So why wouldn't he try something like that?
Yeah, and, you know, I always say, if you feel really good, unless you're preparing for a very specific event that's a big deal, there's a meet that you're going to do. There's going to be something where you're trying to hit a particular number. You're just in training, and you feel particularly good that day. That could be the day where you set your new personal record. So
absolutely,
freaking do it. So back to the guys that are at this.
Yep.
A lot of people today think of Bob Hoffman as this old guy who talked forever and talked really slowly and was the grand old man of these things. he was actually a lifter too.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he was known for was his bent pressing. And I actually had a customer talking to me earlier this week about bent press. He's like, you know, I'd like to know more about bent pressing. It seems like this lost art, and I think guys were probably really good at it other than Arthur Saxon. And the answer is yes. Guys like Bob Hoffman were actually really good at it. They've got a big thing on bent pressing here. Now, Hoffman did it. He had a barbell, he said, that they made for this event.
Yeah.
And here's how he's set up. He warmed up with 9 presses with a 50-pound dumbbell,
mm-hmm.
then 9 with a 100-pound dumbbell. And I'm guessing we're talking mostly bent presses, although it might have been a bit of stretching and stuff like that involved too, you know, for warm-up. Then he turned to a new revolving barbell with a thick handle to which can be added huge globes when desired.
Mm-hmm.
His presses were 155, 175, 195, all with flawless style. Then came the more difficult lifts, first with a new barbell, short-handled but with the huge globes of the stage bells that he'd used in the past. So then he cleans it, pressed it, held it aloft for at least 5 seconds at the completion of the movement. Then he did the sear bell, which you can go see at the Weightlifting Hall of Fame. It's kind of anchored down, but you can grab onto it, and you're not going to wear it out. Which Louis Cyr, the strongest man that ever lived, exceeded Eugene Sandow's record of 271 with a press of 273.5 back in 1888. But Bob explained that he was no Louis Cyr, and it had it loaded to 231. But here he's doing a 231. And let's get on to the next page here with the sear bell, which has a bigger handle, folks. And then he goes up to the stage bell, which on this occasion weighed exactly 250 pounds. Thick handled, hard for the average man to handle. Bob pulled it up like it was a toy. Again, made a perfect press. 6 presses without a miss.
Wow.
Yeah. Went for... Bob hoped to break his lifetime record in the modern world's record of 270, set last year at the November 9th show, meaning 1939.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to tell what he can do now. Just to sum up, he didn't make it. But he did do a 250-pound bent press, which... I'm guessing for Hoffman at the time, because Hoffman apparently weighed as much as like 270 at one point when he got much bigger. But he probably only weighed, I'm guessing, 220 at this time. So he's bent pressing over body weight, and that's a one-handed lift. So I don't know if he would clean it and then set it, or rock it up like a Steinborn. But regardless, he did 250-pound bent press. And his record ultimately became 270, which he actually did. So, very cool. Now, back to some of the other lifts. For those of you wondering what some of this pre-drug era stuff was, on a platform that they made outdoors in the grass, and they said... at one point was basically a pile of splinters because there was no such thing as a bumper plate back then, and they didn't rubberize these things, so it was all wood. Turpak pressed 250, snatched 230, and jerked 325. Now that's being... 148, 165, somewhere around there. John Davis.
Yep.
Realized Davis had just turned 20 years old. Pressed 260, snatched 250, and jerked 330.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a 181. So,
yep.
You know, he was probably right around 181 at that point. Not too shabby.
Now, no, not at all.
To give you an idea what John Terry actually did, they had a little contest with a guy named Cass Kloschewitz and Vic Chiatti, who I have not heard of except in this article, but they were obviously good enough to be in this little demo.
Yeah.
And they were bigger guys. There was a 148 and a 165. But John Terry was a 132.
Yep.
Pressed 190.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Killer, man.
Snatched 200.
Wow.
And then jerked 270.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at, if you go out and get that hard gainer and he's on the cover, look at the thickness of his whole body, but his legs are massive, man. He's just standing there right on the cover. I mean, incredible. A 132-pound man, and this guy, my God, he could run right through you. I'm not kidding you. Just you looking at him, it's incredible. But go on, Roger.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and if you look at this photo of John Terry doing the split snatch here, his hamstrings stand out in this split like I've never seen. He obviously had, very, very low body fat. And
he's got abdominals from top to bottom.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that because
not the pretty crap either we're talking about. Thick functional muscle that stands right out. I mean, incredible, man.
Well, and that is a really interesting thing for you to point out, and I did not prep Eric to say that.
That's okay. Yeah. No, he didn't either.
No.
I'm just telling you from looking at the picture I just saw. And,
well,
you know.
Right after this demo, they know at this point, Terry and Davis gave exhibitions of muscle control.
Yep.
Both of these young champions have magnificent physiques, are well up at the head of the world's best built men. So here we have Olympic lifters who are doing full muscle control routines. And for anybody who's never seen a muscle control routine, that's like abdominal isolation where they, some of the old writers call it muscle jumping or muscle gymnastics, where you can see like an isolated abdominal where the rest goes smooth and one goes and pops out. And that's where they get the idea of, the rippling muscles of a strongman is the muscle control thing. And if you want to see some of that kind of stuff, you can also look up on YouTube in yoga. There are some people who do a thing called Nuali, and there's a couple different ways of spelling it, but I think it's N-U-A-L-I. And obviously the yoga people aren't going to be built like
John Terry
and John Davis.
Absolutely not.
But you'll get the idea of what we're talking about, because modern bodybuilders really don't do muscle control.
No, and you know something, Raj? I mean, you remember Ed Jubenville? He was huge on that.
Yes.
You know, you look at any of the old school guys way back in the day, even the great Gama there. I mean, they all did all that breathing for abdominal strength, and you look at their abdominals. You know, everybody's always like, and I've read tons of literature on that stuff. I think Bill Hinburn even put a course out on that years ago. It was very interesting because, you know, everybody says, well, you got to diet and you got to do 10, I hate the word core, but you got to do all these core movements. Well, it's been proven. These guys, through deep breathing and holding and knowing how to inhale and exhale, you can create a set of abdominals on you like insane. And not only that, if you're doing any stuff in a power rack, I'm talking any type of overloading, whether it be squats, overhead, deadlifting, I'm telling you right now, maybe you're not ripped, and who gives a shit about being ripped, all right? You don't need to be down to 3% body fat, which is unhealthy anyways. But boy, I'll tell you what, I dare anybody to give you a shot to the abdominals because your hand's going to hurt real friggin' bad, man.
Well, and it's well known that guys like Harry Houdini did muscle control training. John Grimmick had his own muscle control routine, and that sprang from watching these other shows. But, Grimmick said that getting ready for the 1936 Olympics, he said he only trained for 3 months for the Olympics and did no real lifting for about the 2 years before then.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan Dellinger, who I worked with at York, told me, he says, "Well, John, how could you do no lifting for 2 years and look like that?" And he says, "Well, I didn't lift any barbells." So he says, "So what'd you lift?" "Well, cars and people." So
See, that's what separated those guys from everything today, man. It was like instinctively they knew what to do. And, you know, we talk about how good they were. Well, we had talked about this on another show. You know, we didn't have the amount of additives and foods and the GMOs. And I don't want to sound like everybody else beating the drum, but it did make a difference. And they ate fresh. You know, you think about it, I remember my grandmother telling me, they hardly froze anything. They went down and got everything fresh that day. You know, you cooked what you bought. And there's, you know, you've got all the enzymes in there. You've got all the minerals and you got the good fats and all that, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's very essential to if you want to get to where you want to get today, too. Can you eat stuff like that? Yeah. I mean, we all do. But I think, you know, I think something that is not spoken about enough now is real food. Okay? These guys ate, you mentioned with Hoffman.
Yeah, Hoffman owned a market.
Absolutely. So Hoffman had put it together years and years and years ago. You know, you read all this bullshit now. You know, everybody's a brain, you know. Oh, we make these super drinks or we do this. And you know what, man? Who gives a damn? If it works for you, great. But it doesn't mean it's going to work for me. I like eating. I love meat. I'm a meat eater, okay? Beef is my favorite. I'll eat almost anything. But if you put a big, thick, juicy hamburger that's not, you know, oh, it's got to be 90% lean or whatever it is, I'm like, no, I want that thing dripping fat off into my Weber. You better get your hand out of the way because I'll eat your hand and the burger together, okay? That's the way you make gains. That's how you do things. And the thing that I find now that pisses me off more than anything, and I know it's a way to make money, but you confuse people enough, they're going to do anything you want to do at that point. Take this, the next great protein whey, you know? Or this smoothie will put 15 pounds of muscle on you in 3 weeks, you know? And no one ever gets down to the point of eating good vegetables, good fruits that are low glycemic, and especially the meat, you know? And you know something? There's nothing wrong with eating a baked potato. I mean, everybody like goes, oh, my God, it's insulin. It's bull. The way I make them, they don't. I'll tell you how I cook them. I slice them, not all the way through, two or three slices in it, olive oil, and I bury butter in the middle of it. So you can take your starches and all that and goodbye, you know. Wrap it up, put it on the Weber, away it cooks. It's the most delicious thing. You know, I always buy, you know, organic because I like eating skins. So I eat the whole thing. So, you know.
Well, and your buddy John Wood, doesn't he do – he owns a beef.
Oh, dude. His stuff, U.S. Wellness, is like – I tell anybody, I mean, I don't put my stamp on much. I endorse John 100%. And I'll tell you what, I, you know, other than like you and a few other people I've dealt with through the years, customer service is second to none. And I don't care what anybody tells you. That and word of mouth, I feel, will make or break anything you do in your life. So, yes, Roger, he is – all grass fed.
Now, does he do just beef, or does he do other animals too?
Oh no, well, I've never looked at. Well, he does all the other stuff too, and he does get some through other people, obviously. But he does bison, lamb, poultry, duck, pork, rabbit, and seafood.
Okay.
But he gets into the oh my God, the pemmican and all that stuff. They do all that, and he's into like pet food now and everything. I mean, this guy has grown this thing from nothing.
You know,
and I mean,
one of the things that I do, Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
If and here's a little trick for you guys when you're trying to increase the quality of the food that you're eating.
Yep.
And get a lot of this crap out of it.
Yeah.
I learned a long time ago, because when I first started Atomic Athletic, we actually sold meat.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was a local producer. Oh. That had a bison, ostrich, and emu farm.
Sick.
And I sold, it was vacuum-packed, fresh bison, ostrich, and emu.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was tremendous. All, you know, range type stuff. So I learned a lot from the woman who, I can't believe her name's coming to me, Lorray Durr. She was really cool. I don't know if she's still in the business or not, but when I first started, and it, you know, and then I honed what I've done over the years, and I got out of that because I moved from Pennsylvania and
sure.
All that kind of thing. But one of the things that she pointed out to me is that ostrich, emu, and bison.
Mm-hmm.
And bison's the most common one for you to find at, like, a restaurant.
Yeah.
You can't grow those animals
mm-hmm.
the same way you do with cows.
Sure.
Where, you know, the cow might move, you know, except when they're – it may be once a day you have them move 20 feet with a cow.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Bison won't put up with that. They're too big.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah, they're huge. They'll wreck all the equipment, and yep. they need to be able to run outside.
Yeah.
So, yep. well, there's feed that you give them. They're also eating a wide variety of vegetation that's yep. in the area that they're roaming in.
Yep.
And it's the same way for the ostrich and the emu.
Yep.
So you're not dealing with an animal that's being, you know, pumped full of just one single kind of food.
Yep.
You know, theoretically, I guess they could be filling them with all kinds of antibiotics and
sure.
stuff like
yep.
that. But
yep.
I don't really hear about that kind of thing with the bison people. And I kind of yep. I try to pay attention to and read sites periodically and talk to people. I'd love to talk to John at some point about bison and water. Those are my two big things where I really try to pay attention to that. And I've even gotten more into water since this past summer when, you know, Toledo did not have consumable water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a major issue today. So these two things, and Hoffman was into water, too. In fact, one of, you know, I collect various pieces of memorabilia. I've got yeah. a bottle, you know, original glass, refillable glass bottle from Hoffman's spring water company that he had.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I've even got an original heavy-duty cardboard crate from yeah. it. But these are all things that these guys were into. And
yeah.
just to kind of sum up the picnic deal a little bit, because
yeah. yeah.
we're talking about food.
yeah, we're getting near the end anyway.
Yeah.
For the show.
Yeah, we're getting towards the end of the show. But it wasn't just all lifting with half a dozen guys.
No.
You had, of course, food.
Yep.
And you had what were sometimes called the impromptu events, certainly at my picnics. That's what we called them.
Yep.
So there was a rope climbing event.
Yep.
They had, let's see if we can get the height here. I think they said it was 19 feet. Davis actually won that contest after all of his lifting and everything else. They said he was no rope climber, but he is a one-arm chinner.
Yep.
And after being urged to try his skill and strength, he made the trip to the limb of the huge oak tree in no less than 10 seconds.
That's sick.
Long, powerful pull-ups marked his upward progress. In addition to that, they had a broad jumping contest, which it turns out Davis also won. And at the end of the day, they had an orchestra play with a dance contest. They were jitterbugging.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, man.
It is cool. And they talk about how Gracie Bard would, let's see, how they describe it. Elmer Farnham, who was a national level lifter, combined a bit of adagio with the jitterbug. Adagio, for people who don't know, is a type of dancing that incorporates like hand balancing in it. Tossing Gracie back through his legs where she would regain the upright position, swinging her up into the handstand position, turning cartwheels, and having many other variations.
That's awesome stuff, man. It really is.
It really is. It's cool. And they had a woman here who was doing contortion and hand balancing in the photo.
Wow.
It's
wow.
Anyway, you had food, you had just a full day of it, and people would drive all night to get to these events. It's in fact, for a lot of years, I did the Atomic Athletic Great Black Swamp Old Time Strongman Picnic. We did six of them, and I did a couple of events before that at the Arnold Classic, the Night of Strength events, and that got me into looking at these old shows and events that people used to put on, with Hoffman's being the most prominent, probably, this is my guess, because of the magazine and his own promotion of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so, I've actually put together a short booklet that I just sent off to the printer about these shows, and there are some short profiles of some of these guys like John Terry and John Grimmick and Bob Hoffman and some of their feats, especially from when they were in their prime.
Sure.
This is the time period that they are referring to 20, 30, and 40 years later as the great stuff that happened and what made them awesome. And when I worked at York, there were guys, well, I had one guy send me footage that I just found the other day. I've got to get it transferred. He took with his portable movie camera.
Yep.
It's like a minute's worth of footage of Grimmick on stage at one of these picnics, doing his muscle control routine.
Killer.
It's really awesome stuff. So I put together this little booklet, and initially it'll be available with some of these Spoono mats. I'm going to combine the booklet and the Spoono mat because, hey, what the heck? It's from the same event as the primary source material.
Yep.
And it's one thing to get your little bit of memorabilia, your thing, where you can say, look at this, and it still works, and I can mix my protein shakes or my green vegetable shake or whatever with my Spoono mat, just like John Grimmick did.
Exactly.
It's, they had a milkshake area at York Barbell, and guys would bet milkshakes for lifts. You know, they compete with each other. All right, contest today.
Absolutely.
You know, Grimmick and Tommy Kono going against each other for dumbbell presses.
Sure.
You know, for a milkshake, you can do your own stirring with a genuine spoon-o-mat from 1940.
Hey, why not? Everything that's old is new, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And read about what these guys actually did and see the photos and say, oh, okay, these were real people. This is stuff that they did. And just like you had Andrew Derniot absolutely dominating at some of my picnic events, you know, back in 1940, you had guys like John Davis.
Yep.
Just one thing after another, and you say, my God, this guy is Superman. He can he can climb better than anybody else. He can jump. He can lift. What can't this guy do?
Exactly. All I can say is it was a different era, and we're doing our best to try to keep it still, you know, out there, get more people to see how important this stuff was, especially the York stuff. It was incredible stuff, you know, strength and health, all that. Whether you agree with what Hoffman did with everything or disagree, that was a special time, especially in the United States. And Roger and I and others hope to really keep that out there, hopefully keep it growing, and get the audience really, you know, really into this. You know, go out and look this stuff up. We're going to have more stuff anyways, but I think that this stuff is so valuable because no matter what you're into, you can learn so much from these people, man. They were just a whole different breed, ahead of the times. I think they were 100 years ahead of the times. I really do. So, Raj, you got anything else, or you set?
You know, we've done a string of shows here where I focus on a single strongman and some of the lifts that they were famous for and some instructional training things to go with that, some of which was well-known and some of it's not all that well-known. And I wanted to bring in the Hoffman picnic with the York gang circa 1940, ostensibly at their peak. And introduce a whole list of guys' names that people might not be familiar with.
Absolutely.
And some of these guys, although we had, last summer we did one just on Grimmick, right?
Yeah.
Where we came up with the idea of focusing on one strong man.
Yep.
Next week, we will go back to focusing on a single guy and maybe two guys. And some of these individuals will be in that group because in 1940, for some of these guys, it was actually just the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was like the egg, man. You know what I mean? It just poop, grew.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll get into that. And what else you got? If you want, give your information. I'll give you mine. We'll talk for a second. That's up to you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, my name is Roger LaPointe, and the company is Atomic Athletic, and that's spelled AtomicAthletic. And you can find us at atomicathletic.com, and, you know, books, videos, wall charts, lots of great equipment, all that kind of thing. But in the upper right-hand corner, you can do more reading. It's all free in our blog, simply BLOG, the upper right. And I think it's right next to the FAQ option. And then in the lower left, you can sign up for the Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin, which is our email newsletter that I've done for over 15 years. In fact, this month will be the 16th anniversary of Atomic Athletic.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Thank you. On St. Patrick's Day. So.
Awesome. You got to have a green beer and salute Raj.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about it down the road when I know some more stuff. But this is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're being sponsored today by U.S. Wellness Meats. Like I said in the beginning, John Wood and his family are fantastic people, and they've taken this farm from nothing to where it is today. It's an incredible story. His dad is in his 90s, and his father still works on the farm. That's testament right there to what it is. You want grass-fed beef, he is the best around. He's even got stuff you can buy where it's they flash it all. It's fresh, though, and you can only get it. I can't remember. I believe you have to order it either by the end of the week for it to come, like on a Monday or Tuesday. I believe, John, anytime it comes here, everything is FedEx. It's packed all in the coolers. I'm telling you right now, there's nobody out there like him. His service is second to none. And if you ever get the opportunity to speak to John, you'll enjoy it totally. He's one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met. We've had him on the show in the early part. We're going to have him on again. He is such an interesting guy, and he's just a blast to be around. And he's been a big supporter of the show, like Roger and many others, for a long time. He's helped me out recently, and we're going to talk about some of that stuff after all the feedback is done with me. So contact John at www.grasslandbeef.com. That's www.grasslandbeef.com. You will not be disappointed. So give John either a call, or, you know, he's got a real very, very friendly website. It's very interactive. It'll give you all the information you need. So give John a try. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher. You know, write us a review. You want Roger and I to do a show? I'm sure we can come up with something. We got enough brain power to do that. Obviously, the websites are www.fiorellobarbellco.com, www.motivationandmuscle.com. We are going to be number one. I'm telling you right now, we are going to kick ass all the way through. And anybody that ever said to me, you guys going to go soft when you make it, you'd be better off burying me in a ditch, because it's not going to happen. So I promise you that. We want to thank all the listeners out there. Without you, we just wouldn't be doing, you know, we love doing this, but the idea is, you know, we're a family. We want to help each other out, educate each other. That's the whole idea. We want to see everybody just get better and better. If there's something you've been wanting to do, go after it. That's what it's all about. You know, you go out there and make a commitment, be persistent in everything you do. You know you're going to get knocked back millions of times, but if you keep persevering in everything, you'll make it. Roger and I can tell you we got plenty of experience in it right now. I'm dealing with some stuff right now. It's not a lot of fun, but going to get through it, and I'll be in Iceland this year. Might be a little later, but I don't know. We'll see. I think that's it for right now. We're going to have an announcement, though, next week about the weight loss product is coming out. I'm just waiting to hear from my web guy. And that looks like it. Raj, thanks again for being on the show. This was a really interesting show. Totally enjoyed it. It's kind of good. They say you should never go backwards, but when we're going backwards, listening to that stuff, it's only going forward in your life, you know?
Absolutely. You know, hearing about guys like Hoffman,
yep,
casually doing, you know, 6 250-pound bent presses.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of time where lifts like that have been forgotten.
Yeah.
And, you know, split snatches, you know, split cleans, just even deadlifting. You know, all natural deadlifting. Guys wearing a pair of shorts and some shoes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, deadlifting not 610 pounds at 132-pound body weight.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to go find somebody right now that could touch that. They're prizing anybody. If there is, they're like us. They're hidden out in the woods somewhere, just training and minding their own business, man.
Yeah, and good for them. That's
I agree. And we're going to be doing some stuff like that next year. Wait till you hear some of the things I've got planned. Roger, if I can get Roger away from a few things, he might be accompanying me to a couple things. I haven't even told him yet. But if I get my way, there's going to be some very interesting, very impact stuff next year that I've never seen anybody do.
Well, and this year coming up, there is going to be a super, super cool event at Dr. Bob Cejeda's bar in Livonia, Michigan.
Nice.
Shemansky related.
Oh, that's great.
So,
all right. Well, hey,
good
look,
stuff.
Yeah, real good stuff. I mean, if everything goes right, it's going to, the rest of this year is just going to be high times, man, let me tell you, because we can't have too many lows when we're doing the things we like to do. So, Raj, thanks. And, you know, obviously we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome. So for Roger LaPointe, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening to the show. As I always say, you know, don't be timid. Go out and just bust some ass today. You need to do it. You need to be tested every day. And we're going to keep reminding you of that, because when you start feeling like you're fading, we're going to be that little voice in your ear, and we're going to say, get your ass up and go out and do it. So have a great week, and Roger and I will be talking to you next Tuesday. And like I said, go out and do something.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.